the next section we go into is talking about, you know, why they are suitable objects of refuge. And here we particularly talk about the Buddha and why the Buddha is a good object of refuge. And this section is much less intellectual, you know, and there's a lot of stories in it. So let's hope I can get the stories right, because, you know, I usually bungle them up. So anyway, so there's four qualities that talk about why the Buddha is a good object of refuge, you know, a reliable object. And really, it's so important to choose a reliable object of refuge and to really know why the Buddha is reliable. Because, you know, again and again, we can start to see what happens when people choose unreliable objects of refuge. You know, the classic case being Jim Jones. Yeah? And so, you know, by knowing the qualities of the Buddha, why he's reliable, then that gives us some confidence, you know, that we can really trust in what's happening. Okay, so the first quality that the Buddha has is that all the Buddhas, they're free from all fears, okay, so they can help others overcome theirs. Now, what kind of fears are the Buddhas free of? There's two kinds of fears. They call it the fear of samsara and the fear of nirvana. Okay. Now you're going to go, okay, samsara, cyclic existence, you know, all these constantly recurring problems, I can understand being afraid of that. But how can I be afraid of nirvana? What do you mean afraid of nirvana? What it's referring to here when we talk about the fear of nirvana, it doesn't mean that you're terrified of nirvana. What it's talking about is what they call the state of an arhat, where one has liberated one's mind from cyclic existence and has a state of peace and calm that comes through wisdom. However, one is not yet a fully enlightened being. One hasn't yet generated the altruistic intention. One hasn't yet purified the subtle stains on the mind. So one is still limited in one's ability to benefit others. So a Buddha doesn't have any fear of getting caught in that state of self-complacent peace, because a Buddha has the great compassion that motivates them to purify their minds completely and develop their qualities completely. Yeah? No, self-complacent peace here means the peace of nirvana, the peace of arhatship. It's self-complacent in the sense that one has freed oneself from cyclic existence, and one's satisfied with that. Okay? It doesn't mean that that's bad. I mean, because arhats certainly have infinite number more good qualities than we ordinary beings do. But it is a limited state of realization, and a Buddha isn't bound by that limitation. Nor are the Buddhas caught in the cycle of existence. And that's important because, you know, it's like if we're drowning, we want somebody on dry land who can save us. If we're drowning and the guy next to us is drowning, he can't help at all. He's drowning also, so let alone save himself, can't help us. So similarly, if the guides we take refuge in aren't free of cyclic existence, you know, how can they possibly show us the way? How can they really guide us? It's one drowning person trying to save another one. Okay, so when we say the Buddha's free of the fears of samsara or cyclic existence, it means, you know, the person on the dry land, the person who's crossed over to the other shore, you know, who has that internal stability and security of spiritual realization so that they can really help. Okay. So when we think about this, you know, it gives us some confidence in the Buddha, and we see also why it's necessary to have attain full enlightenment to be best able to benefit others. Okay? Because if we haven't gotten ourselves out of cyclic existence, we can't help ourselves, let alone help others. If we've only attained, you know, nirvana for ourselves alone, then we are still limited and can't help others. Then the second quality of the Buddhists is that they have skillful and effective means to free others from all fear. Okay? So, without having skillful means to free us, then what are the Buddhas going to do? Amchok Rinpoche was explaining this last week. Do you remember? He said, you know, even if you have wisdom and you have compassion, if you don't know what to do, you've had it. You know, how can you help others? So, you know, the Buddhas have the compassion, they have the methods, they have the techniques. And also what they have that enables them to use these techniques properly is that they have the full knowledge of our karma and our different level of dispositions. Because different beings have different dispositions, different beings are attracted to different things, different people will respond better to different kinds of meditations. And so the Buddhas are able to tune into that and then to prescribe in a skillful way the techniques that are needed for that particular person in order to be able to lead them. Okay? So without skill, then the Buddha can't guide all other beings in accordance to their own karmic tendencies and their own mental inclinations and dispositions. So in this line, they tell some stories in the scriptures about how the Buddha guided different beings, and these stories are done to illustrate his skill in being able to guide others. So, and I think these stories are very effective for when we begin to feel hopeless and very sorry for ourselves, because then when we compare ourselves to these other beings who the Buddha did really manage to lead to liberation, we begin to think, well, I'm not quite that bad. You know, there's some hope for me. Okay, so take the example of, there's this one person in the scriptures, his name was Little Path. His brother was named Big Path. Don't ask me why his parents named him. But, you know, that was his name. And the thing was, he was really dumb, and he couldn't remember anything. And so his teacher would try and teach him things. His teacher would try and teach him the two syllables, om, bum, and when he remembered om, he forgot bum, and when he remembered bum, he forgot om. And his teacher eventually threw him out because he couldn't learn anything. And then his parents took care of him for a while, and eventually they died. And so he went to live with his older brother, and his older brother tried to teach him. And again, his older brother couldn't get through to him at all because poor Little Path was just really dumb. I mean, he couldn't hold it together. So his brother kicked him out. So he was sitting on the monastery steps crying, you know, because his teacher kicked him out. His parents died. His brother kicked him out. He doesn't know what to do. And the Buddha comes along and, you know, Little Path explains the situation to the Buddha, and the Buddha says, don't worry, I'll help you. So the Buddha gave him a broom and had him start to sweep the monk's shoes, you know, to clean them off. And he told him to say, remove dirt, remove stain. And so slowly, by just cleaning the shoes, he gained them. He purified his mind so he could remember remove dirt and remove stain. And at that point, the Buddha enlarged the scope of his cleaning job to include the whole courtyard. And so Little Path swept one side of the courtyard saying, clean the dirt, clean the stain, and then he swept the other side, and when he got done sweeping that side, the first side was dirty again, so he went back. The first time, and then, you know, he got done and the second side was dirty again. So he spent, I don't know how long, going back and forth, cleaning the two sides of the courtyard, constantly saying, clean the dirt and clean the stain. Okay. And eventually, Yeah, through offering service in this way, through the power of, you know, offering service and generating confidence in the Buddha, he began to realize that clean the dirt meant eliminate all of the ignorance, anger, and attachment from the mind, eliminate all of the contaminated karma from the mind. And clean the stains meant eliminate all the subtle stains of truth on the mind, eliminate all the grasp the appearance of true existence, the subtle obscurations of it. And he began to realize what clean the dirt, clean the stain meant. And gradually, by contemplating this more and more and more, he eventually attained liberation. Okay. So this is showing that the Buddha had really incredible skill to be able to lead somebody who was that dumb that he couldn't remember Om Bam to become an arhat. But that gives me great confidence, you know, because I can remember Om Bam, so you know, I'm a little bit more advanced than this guy. There's some hope for me, okay? And also the Buddha has the skillful means to be able to do this. Then another story who the Buddha helped. I don't know if you've heard the story of Angulimala. Yeah, talk about meeting up with wrong gurus. Angulimala did it, you know. He met up with one spiritual master who completely followed the berserky path and told Angulimala to go out and kill 1,000 people and to take the thumb bones, you know, of 1,000 people and string them on a string to make a necklace. And if he did that, that's the way to liberation. Okay? So, you know, he got mixed up with a berserky teacher, and he went out, and his anger just got more and more and more because he started killing all these people. So he just kept generating more and more anger, being really, really savage, and everybody was totally terrified of him. And so he killed 999 people. He needed one more to go. He was going to kill his own mother. Okay. And at this point, the Buddha saw what was going on, and the Buddha stepped in. And Angulimala said, okay, I'll kill this guy rather than kill my mother, and started walking after the Buddha. And Angulimala starts running and running and running, and the Buddha's just walking nice and leisurely, but he can never catch up to the Buddha. So he shouts out to the Buddha, stop, you know. He didn't say, I want to kill you, but, you know, stop. And the Buddha said, I have stopped. No, what are you talking about? And the Buddha explained, well, I've stopped all my anger, attachment, and ignorance. I'm free from, you know, the defilements and suffering. And so he, in that way, made Angulimala begin to reflect on whether what he was doing was really the path to liberation or not. And in that way, he was able to subdue Angulimala's wrong conceptions and his great anger. And eventually, Angulimala, he did this incredible intense purification practice, and he eventually became an arhat. So again, if it can happen to somebody like him, you know, well, we haven't killed 999 people, so, you know, the method is going to stop to help us. Okay, so we've had an example of somebody who was very ignorant, somebody who was very angry. Then there's an example of somebody who's very attached, and this was the Buddha's own brother named Nanda. And Nanda, this is not Ananda, okay? Ananda was one of his chief disciples who took care of him, his chief attendant. This is Nanda, okay, his brother. And his brother was married and incredibly attached to his wife. I mean, talk about codependent relationships. This was really it. I mean, he could not stand to be away from his wife for a split second because he was just so enamored with her beauty, so taken with her. Okay? So what the Buddha did in order to help Nanda, because, you know, obviously when Nanda's mind so overwhelmed by craving desire, you know, no space in that mind for Dharma. I didn't want to hear about the Dharma. So the Buddha was very skillful, and he took Nanda and showed him the upper realms, the god realms, where they have all these incredible, beautiful goddesses. So this was even better than his wife. So he got very excited, you know, and wanted to know, how can I get born in this realm? And so the Buddha explained to him about the value of creating good karma and positive action. And then the Buddha took him and showed him the hell realm. And of course, Nanda freaked out at this point. I definitely don't want to be born here. What's the cause of being born here? And the Buddha explained, great attachment. So then Nanda got the idea. Yeah? And in that way, he began to eliminate his attachment, and he too eventually attained idealization. So there is hope for us. Then there's another story about somebody who felt really lousy about himself. And this is the story about the ugly abandoned child who was so ugly, you know, and he was an orphan, I guess, so he was wandering around trying to beg from people. And he was so ugly that everybody just couldn't even stand to be around and couldn't stand to look at him. And so he was just completely overwhelmed with his inferiority complex. Okay, so talk about low self-esteem issues, you know, this is really it. And so what the Buddha did here, he was very skillful. He manifested as somebody who was even uglier. So when this ugly child saw this other person who was even uglier, he began to feel a little bit better about it. You know how we are when we can see somebody else's worst? So he began to feel better about himself. And the Buddha, still in this very ugly form, continued to hang around, and they became very good friends and developed some trust. And the Buddha, in this way, began to explain to, you know, this ugly orphan that the reason for being born like this is due to negative actions, and in that way began to teach him about purification, about the Four Noble Truths, about Nirvana, and so forth. And he, too, eventually, you know, practiced the path and gained realization. So this is just kind of all demonstrating some of the Buddha's skill in being able to know people's different dispositions and know exactly how to teach them, exactly what to do, you know, how to say it. So that, you know, knowing this gives us some confidence in the Buddha as a reliable source of refuge, and it also makes us think about, well, what does it mean for me to be skillful with other people, and what qualities do I need to develop to be really able to tune into where other people are at and help them accordingly. Then, the next quality of the Buddha, why he's a suitable object of refuge, is that the Buddhas have equal compassion for everybody. Okay, so they don't consider some beings close and others distant. Yeah, so this is something to think about, because look at our minds. Okay, we have close friends, yeah, that we want to be around, and the people we want to help, who it's easy to help. And then there's all these other people who we think are distant, and so who cares about them? You know, I mean, look at the partiality in our own mind. You know, we help the people who are close, and we have warm feelings about them, and everybody else we just ignore and dismiss. Okay, well, the Buddha is free from that kind of lopsided compassion. Yeah, the Buddha has impartial compassion for every living being, no matter whether they're related to him or not, no matter whether they have faith in him or not. Okay? So this is, you know, is really something to think about. Because again, you know, people who like us, we want to help, and people who dislike us, we want to harm. The Buddha wants to help all of them. Okay? So this is a quality that makes the Buddha a really reliable source of refuge, because of this equal compassion towards everybody, will want to help and benefit everybody. Okay? So in other words, the Buddha won't play favorites. And this is really important, you know, because for a spiritual guide, we don't want a spiritual guide that's going to play favorites. Because, you know, if the spiritual teacher plays favorites, then, you know, chances are we could get left out. well, the Buddha doesn't play favorites in the way. And in fact, they have some stories about the Buddha. And yeah, like his cousin, Devadatta. You know, if you think you have bad relatives, the Buddha had one too. The Buddha had this cousin, Devadatta, who was always out to get him, who always tried to kill him, and who bonded together with one of the princes at the time, because the king, the prince's father, was a follower of the Buddha, and so both Devadatta and the prince wanted to eliminate whoever it was who had power and themselves take that power, so they, you know, combined efforts. So Devadatta was always trying to do harmful things to the Buddha. He would always, you know, he would roll a stone down to try and crush the Buddha, or he would send a mad elephant out to charge the Buddha. And the mad elephant, by the way, when it charged at the Buddha, and then by the power of the Buddha's loving kindness, the elephant was completely overwhelmed and fell to its knees and bowed before the Buddha. And this is, you might have seen different pictures of this. This is a, you know, a very common story, the power of the loving kindness. And you'll see this elephant bowing to the Buddha. Well, the story behind it was that Devadatta set it loose to kill the Buddha. Yeah, and shucks, foiled again due to the power of the Buddha's compassion. But the point here is that the Buddha, from his side, had no ill feelings towards Devadatta. In other words, from his side, he wanted to help Devadatta attain enlightenment just as much as he wanted to help Shariputra and Mahamudrayana, his two, you know, chief disciples. In other words, there was no favoritism. There was no, you know, I'll help you because you're nice to me, but Devadatta, you're a creep, get away. Yeah. In other words, from Buddha's side, equal compassion, willingness to help to others. Okay. But this is also quite interesting, because we can see through this story that although a Buddha might have equal compassion to others and might try and help others equally, different beings have different abilities to take in the Buddha's teachings and take in the Buddha's benefit. Okay? So receiving guidance from the Buddha isn't just a question of the Buddha giving it. Okay? It's a question also of us receiving it. And so you could see that even though the Buddha was trying to help Devadatta, by the power of his own wrong conceptions, by the power of his own closed-mindedness, was completely blocking out that positive influence. So you see, this is part of the reason why we have to do a lot of purification, is to remove, you know, the things obscuring us from being able to open up to receive the Buddha's influence. And this also shows why having confidence in the Buddha's quality helps us open up to receive their influence. So why it's important to generate faith or confidence. Because it makes us have an open state of mind, which is very beneficial for, you know, receiving the Buddha's energy. So when they talk about receiving the blessings of the Buddha, okay, rather than the word blessings, it's really better to use the word inspiration of the Buddha. And what it means is that our mind has been able to be transformed through the combined effort of the Buddha helping and guiding and ourself being open to pick it up. Yeah, so receiving the blessings, receiving the inspiration, our mind being transformed is something that depends not only on the Buddha, but on us. Okay? When our minds are closed and shut down, nothing goes in. Yeah? We can see that so clearly, can't we? Yeah? When our own minds are peaceful and open, when there's a feeling of faith and reverence, then we're much more open and susceptible to other people's positive influence. So they often give the analogy of like a, you know, an upside down pot. Yeah, the sun might be shining everywhere indiscriminately, but the pot's upside down, so the plant underneath the pot doesn't get any light. Okay, from the sunshine, it's sun's side, it's shining equally, Okay. From the plant side, it's covered. It can't receive it. So in the same way, you know, due to this equal compassion of the Buddha, you know, giving influence and helping others equally, but when we have a pot over our head, okay, when we surround ourselves by the imprints of our negative actions, by our skepticism and hostility, by all of our wrong conceptions, by our pure quality self-image, then we aren't letting the Buddha's influence get through to us. So understanding this really helps us, you know, get some energy for purifying and, you know, for understanding why confidence is so important. Because the Buddhas from their side, they don't need our faith. I mean, Buddha from his side doesn't care whether we have faith in him or not. You know, I mean, if you're a Buddha, you don't need anybody else to have faith in you. But the faith, the confidence is something that benefits us if we have that kind of open attitude. Okay, and then the last quality, making a Buddha a suitable guide, is that the Buddhas are able to fulfill the aims of all beings, whether or not those beings have helped them or not. Okay? So again, this is emphasizing that there's no favoritism, that the Buddha's not going to help us if we make offerings and not help us if we don't make offerings. Okay? So whether we make offerings or not, whether we have faith or not, whether we're of a high and noble rank or whether we're just, you know, a lousy nobody, it doesn't really matter, again, from the Buddha's side, how we act to him, you know, whether we have good connections or don't have good connections, you know, whether the Buddha can use us to you know, do something for him or not use us to do something for him, that none of that has any bearing upon a Buddha's ability to guide us. Okay? So again, if the Buddha lacked this ability to help others equally, then, if a Buddha didn't have that, then it may not benefit us at all. Or if they do teach and try and benefit us, they may lack the patience to stick with it because they would only teach us if we were nice to them and then kick us out as soon as we become obnoxious. Yeah. Again, this is a really important quality for us to look for in the guides that we take, in this case, the Buddha. And we can see it's an important quality for us to develop in ourselves so that we become able to help others. Okay?